Three prestigious organizations have approached me and asked me to speak on New Age, and I honestly don't know why they have asked me, and that is no false modesty. I've wondered why me. I have never thought of myself as an expert on this subject, but false rumors go around about us all, and one of the false rumors about me is that I am an expert on this. And some of you may know a good deal more about the subject than I do, about the details of it, how it affects our society, how it manifests itself, its historical development, and I'd be interested to hear from you. What I want to concentrate on in the first part of my talk this morning is the world view that New Age gives us, and I want to contrast it with the biblical world view. And I also want to go on to warn against a false hysterical overreaction against it, though of course I am as much against it as you, but there can be a hysterical reaction against it, which I want to warn against. And I want to go on finally to speak about my own experiences of people who have dabbled in the occult. Now, when Sandy Tate approached me and asked me to speak on this, he asked me to take two sessions, and I wrote back and said, I really don't think that I can do that. Just one session would be enough. However, about 2 weeks ago, as I was getting my material together, I realized that one session might not be enough, and I said, could we perhaps go over into a second session as you had originally suggested? And he said, well, if I need to, then I can go a little into the second session. I'm not sure how long this is going to take, so I'm very much playing it by ear. Anyway, here goes. As far as I can understand, New Age is not an organized religion with a definite creed and a definite hierarchy, like Islam. There are no formal New Age temples which you can go to. Islam advances by force and intimidation, but one can so easily just slip into New Age without realizing it at all, and this is its great danger. New Age is a world view relating man, nature, and spirituality. It attempts to embrace ancient paganism from all over the world, Hinduism, the occult, and bring it all together in harmony with modern science. And it's that part of it which, as you may imagine, interests me. And in my attempt to respond to New Age, I want to think through the question of what is the place of nature and creation in Christian theology, because this is New Age's big area, man's harmony with nature and our responsibility to nature. Its spirituality, of course, is not Christian spirituality, though it does use biblical language of God, of love, of goodwill to all men. It is the supposed spirituality of nature itself, of which man is a part, that must be our focus of attention if we are New Agers. According to New Age, man must seek to be one with the spirit of nature, even worship the spirit of nature. New Age is a reaction against Western materialism. In its reaction against materialism, it shares some of the insights of the biblical Christian worldview, though of course it is very different from biblical Christianity. So why should there be a reaction against atheistic materialism? And I want to give two answers to this. First of all, a brief answer, atheistic materialism is a spiritual vacuum. A secular society cannot last long. And if the spiritual void in a secular society is not filled by the Christian faith and the Bible, it will be filled by some other kind of spirituality, especially paganism. And this is what New Age is. It's the revival of ancient paganism in modern dress. The second reason why materialism is dying in our culture is from science itself. And this is what I spoke about last year. And I want to just briefly go over one or two things that I said last year. As science advances, there is a growing realization that a purely materialistic science cannot explain the existence of the wonderful world of nature all around us. For two reasons. Well, I make two points under this heading. Firstly, the amazing complexity of nature, its order, the finely tuned universe in which we live. We could consider this under these headings: the expansion of the universe, the beautifully harmonized laws of physics, nature, the nature of the simplest cell of life, the wonders of the whole biosphere. And that's what I spoke about last year. Since I spoke last year, I read another book by Paul Davis, the professor of theoretical physics in Newcastle University, a fascinating book called The Cosmic Blueprint. He's not a Christian, Paul Davis. But the book's message is that materialism is bankrupt. And Paul Davis, in his book The Cosmic Blueprint, can't make up his mind as to whether the source of order and beauty in the universe is part of the universe. In other words, the universe has its own non-material or spiritual dimension. He's not sure whether that is the case. If he was to come down on that side, he would be a New Ager. Or whether the source of order and beauty in the universe is a creator God, and he simply can't make up his mind. Let me just give one example that he gives of the wonder of nature, which he says cannot be explained from materialism alone. It may be familiar to you. Bird migration. As we know, birds travel from Africa to Europe following the stars. Now, the stars are, of course, relative to the Earth, moving round the Earth. So the birds have to follow stars that are moving. Sea captains in the old days, and maybe today too, were taught how to navigate their ships using the stars, but they had to go to classes to learn navigation by the stars. The birds never go to any class. They never learn navigation. That no one teaches them. That means, Paul Davis says, that encoded in the brain of the bird, and if you take it even further, encoded in the genes of the bird, the DNA code in every single cell of the bird, encoded in there is a map, a moving map or a planetarium of the heavens. Now, to say that that marvelous and incredible wonder of nature, the map of the stars, a moving map of the stars, encoded in the bird's genes, is merely the result of blind, random material processes is nonsense, even given an infinite time for it to develop. And of course, the universe has not had an infinite time. And Paul Davis concludes that for life to have developed at all, even in its simplest form, never mind in the amazing variety that it is in, such as bird migration and a million other examples, there must be, as he must be, a blueprint. That's the title of his book. A force with a purpose, moving nature to its wonderful conclusion, the state in which it is today. It's especially difficult for the materialist to understand how this wonderful order can have taken place, because we know that purely material things move from order to chaos. I used the example last year of your bedroom or your office, which moves from order to chaos. It only moves from chaos to order if you, an intelligent being, tidy it up. Opening the wind and allowing the wind to blow through your office will not tidy it up. It will do the opposite. Now, the fact that the universe is filled with beauty and order, every single atom is packed with beauty and information, means that the source of order and beauty in the universe cannot be found in materialism alone. So what is this source of order? Is it a spiritual force belonging to the universe? That would be the New Age answer. Well, they would say yes to that question. Or is it a spiritual force which has its origin beyond the universe in a creator God? That would be our answer. Our answer would be yes to that. Now, my second main heading under this further main heading, what is the reason for the rejection of materialism, is quantum theory. Now, New Age science loves quantum theory. And to explain what I mean, I want to define the word thing. T-H-I-N-G. What is a thing? A thing is something is in principle. If a thing, in principle, I can know where it is, or it can be known where it is, and how fast it is moving at the same time. For example, the sun is a thing. We know where it is, and we know how fast it's moving relative to other stars, galaxies. The moon is a thing. We know where it is and how fast it's moving. The John Knox statue in New College Square is a thing. We know where it is and how fast it's moving. It's not moving. The cars in which we will travel home this afternoon are things. We know where they are at a certain point, and the police know how fast they're moving. Similarly with trains, and I am a thing. I am in a particular place in Creep Hydro, and I am not moving. I cannot be in more than one place at one time. No thing can. I can't step back in time to yesterday or forward into tomorrow. I can't be in another place while I am here. All material things are confined by the limits of space and time. Now let's move on a bit, and we'll come back to that in a minute. What are the building blocks of nature? What is everything made of? Well, everything is made of other things. Other things. For example, a house is made of bricks. The building blocks of a house are bricks. Now that only means something because we know what a brick is and what it is made of. So what is every, what are material things made of? Well, they're made of molecules. But what are they made of? Well, they're made of atoms. Well, what are they made of? Well, they're made of electrons and quarks. Let's just say electrons. And scientists tell us that you can't get anything smaller than an electron. You can't get... There is, in principle, nothing from which an electron is made. So what thing are they made of? They are not made of anything material. So the statement, the building block of a house is a brick, and the building block of material existence is an electron, are only superficially similar statements. But they're not really similar, because the building block of a house is a brick only means something because you know what a brick is and what it is made of. But if you don't know what an electron is and or what it is made of, since it isn't made of anything, then you have reached the area of mystery. And it shouldn't surprise us then to find that modern physics finds that these basic building blocks of matter are not things. Like I am a thing, like the sun of a thing is a thing, like a train or a car is a thing. They are not confined by the limits of space and time. You cannot know, in principle, where an electron is and how fast it is going at the same time. In other words, its existence is defined by the non-material things. Mm-hmm. Einstein and other scientists predicted that if you have two electrons and they travel apart, even if they're a million miles apart and cannot communicate with one another in any way, if you change the spin of one, it'll change the spin of the other, even though they cannot communicate. In other words, they're bound together. They're interconnected by bonds which go beyond the limits of space and time. They are not confined by the restraints of space and time. Now, New Age loves this sort of thing because it shows that the material universe springs out of the non-material. My last little point from modern science is to do with the old little proverb, a watched kettle never boils. Now we know that, of course, that is untrue. And yet it is true in certain areas. The amazing discovery has been made is that when scientists observe an electron, the thing which is at the very basis of all material existence, the very fact that they're observing it, even though they're not communicating with it in any material way, it's not the warmth of their body or the influence of the microscope, the very fact of observing it affects its behavior. There is, in other words, a mysterious connection between the material world of nature and the human consciousness. New Age loves this discovery. But that doesn't mean that we have to say that quantum theory is of the devil. There was a letter in the Today magazine 2 or 3 months ago saying that quantum theory is all wrong, it's to do with the occult. And of course somebody else the following month wrote in and said this is sheer nonsense, it isn't at all, it's truth science. So far the New Age worldview and the biblical worldview have this in common: materialism is bankrupt as an explanation of what the universe is and how it works. So what is the New Age understanding of this spirituality? Point one, the spiritual is immanent but not transcendent. In other words, New Age is a pantheistic worldview. The world of nature and of the universe is itself God. It has a spiritual dimension of its own, which is God. This is similar to panentheism, similar to process theology, which says that the material is part of God. The universe to God is as body is to soul, so that the material universe is God's body. This is panentheism, which is very similar to pantheism, which simply says that the universe of nature is God. In other words, New Age affirms the immanence of God but denies his transcendence. Secondly, New Age says that the spiritual force in the universe which brings order and beauty to the universe is impersonal. A scientist whose name slips me at the moment wrote the book The Tao of Physics, the Tao being a Japanese word, I understand, for that force that the Japanese believe is there, which has brought the laws of physics to be what they are. It's a spiritual force. The Tao of Physics was the name of the book. At a more popular level, you may have taken your children to see the film Star Wars. Now, in the Star Wars, the blessing that is given is the Force be with you. That is an impersonal force which is believed to pervade the universe, an impersonal spiritual force. Thirdly, New Age believes that this planet Earth is a living organism. James Lovelock wrote a book called, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, Gaia. Is that how you pronounce it? Or Gaia? Gaia. So much about this planet Earth cannot be explained, he says, merely from material science, materialistic science. And interestingly, some of the arguments he uses are the same arguments that creationist science uses to show that the Earth is not so old as we might think. But he comes to a different conclusion than creationist science. He comes to the conclusion that the Earth itself is some kind of living organism, so that it can be described as Mother Nature, and we must be in harmony with this new goddess, Mother Nature, or Mother Earth. Fourthly, New Age believes that all of us are interconnected and must lose our artificial individuality. Fifthly, it believes that we are one with nature and must seek to be absorbed into the spirit of nature. Sixthly, man must make up his own mind as to the difference between good and evil. Ethics is subjective, in other words. And lastly, on this point of New Age spirituality, I want to read to you extracts from this advertisement, which I photocopied from The Economist magazine. By the way, the best weekly news magazine there is, in my opinion. But anyway, the Economist magazine, and I understand other times other newspapers have this advertisement in it. But I saw this when I was reading The Economist, and I decided to copy it. It must have cost an awful lot of money to put that ad in The Economist newspaper. It's entitled, "The Maharishi Offers to Every Government Alliance with Nature's Government Through Maharishi's Vedic Science and Technology to Create Heaven on Earth. The application of the unified field of natural law to raise every area of life to perfection." And this is what the Maharishi says. "Here is a very beautiful, unique and unprecedented opportunity for every head of state. I invite the leaders of the world to examine this offer of alliance with natural law in the light of the latest discoveries of modern physics." Those are things I've been talking about. "The discovery of the unified field of natural law. It is very easy for anyone with the slightest intelligence to understand that if the unified field of all the laws of nature could be accessible to anyone, nothing would be impossible for him. Through my Vedic science and technology, the science and technology of a unified field, any government leader can have easy access to the unified field and raise the administration of his government to be in perfect alliance with the administration of nature's government. The world is in the midst of a dramatic transformation from enmity to friendship. Hope and freedom are dawning in many countries. There is an upsurge of joyfulness everywhere. This transition from fear and suffering to happiness and peace has resulted from the rise of coherence in world consciousness, the Maharishi effect, created by millions of people practicing the programs of Maharishi's Vedic science and technology, the transcendental meditation and TMCD programs," if that's the correct pronunciation. "Through quantum field theories," that's what I've just been talking about, "through quantum field theories, modern science has come to understand that all the laws of nature responsible for conducting all the activity in creation," uses the word creation, interestingly, but I think he uses it in the loose sense of nature, "emerge from one basic unified field. From the unified field, nature governs the universe in perfect order and always in an evolutionary direction. Scientific research has further shown that the Maharishi, something or other, science of perfect health offers the possibility of creating programs of the disease-free society in every country. Already programs of Maharishi and transcendental meditation are being introduced in many countries, including the Soviet Union, Hungary, and Poland." And I gather that that is indeed true, that this is influencing Eastern Europe a lot. Now, I just want to comment briefly on that. Firstly, New Age assumes that nature is eternal. We know from the Bible, and indeed, although one shouldn't use science to prove the Bible, it's certainly the view of 99% of astronomers, that the universe has had a history that did begin at a certain point. The New Age has to assume, really, that nature, or the spirit of nature, is eternal. Secondly, I would ask this question: how can the spiritual force be impersonal if it has produced persons, namely human beings? Because the spiritual force behind the order in the universe must itself be at least as great as the greatest thing in nature. The greatest thing in nature is the conscious, personal human being. And any spiritual force that is impersonal would therefore be inferior to the conscious, personal human being. Surely, any spiritual force acting within nature must be at least personal. Now, I want to contrast this New Age worldview with an opposite worldview, but not the biblical worldview. We'll come to that in a minute. The deist worldview. This is the opposite worldview because it teaches that God is transcendent but not immanent. The deist worldview believes that God created the material universe, but from then on, the material universe can be understood in purely materialistic terms. Now, there's even a form of Orthodox Christianity, Orthodox in inverted commas, which has this view. There's a kind of Christian orthodoxy which sees God's only continuing relationship with the world as a relationship of making occasional raids, to use C.S. Lewis's terms, into the world in the form of miracle or answers to prayer. In this scheme, there is little place for the biblical teaching of Christ holding all things in himself, Colossians 1, John 1, little place for the biblical teaching of Old and New Testament of the redemption of nature. Come back to that later on. According to this type of orthodoxy, salvation is for man's soul only as he escapes from this material world, which is not relevant to redemption and salvation. The doctrine of God's providential care for the world of nature has little place in this form of deism. He is transcendent only, apart from the occasional raid into nature. The world is only the stage on which the story of redemption is enacted. It does not share in the story of redemption. And if I dare to say this, hope I don't want to offend anyone, the chosen people are seen as significant, but not the promised land. That would be merely incidental to God's purposes. Now let's move on, thirdly, to the biblical worldview. The biblical worldview, firstly, God has created a wonderful world. He is the creator, and the world and the universe are creation. There is a distinction. He transcends all of creation. Whether you're an ordinary person watching a TV nature program, or looking at a rose in your garden, or whether you're a biologist considering the structure of life, or whether you're a physicist considering the reasons for the laws of nature, or whether you're an astronomer considering the nature of the whole universe, unless you're deliberately blind, you will see that God has given us an amazing and wonderful and awe-inspiring world that should make us weep with joy and worship. And the source of the order and wonder and beauty in all the universe is the Logos, the eternal Logos, the Word of God, the Spirit of God, moving over an earth which is without form and void, bringing into being the wonders of land and sea and vegetation and animal life and finally human life. The source of this order is the personal Word of God working with the personal Spirit of God. Secondly, God not only created the world of nature, but he sustains all things in being. In other words, God is immanent as well as transcendent. In him we live and move and have our being, says the Apostle Paul. in Acts 17. But not only does he sustain and support his people, he upholds all things by the word of his power, according to the writers of the Hebrews. And as I've already quoted, Colossians 1, in Christ all things hold together. And there is, therefore, interconnection. Yes, even in the biblical worldview, there is interconnection. We are indeed individuals accountable to God, but not just individuals. We are also families, churches, peoples. We belong to the whole of humanity. We were one with Adam in his sin. And the people of God are one in Christ in redemption. Not artificially, but in a real way. We were there across the bounds of space and time when they crucified my Lord. It really was our sins that he carried in his body. In Christ, all things in space and time, past, present, and future, hold together. God is transcendent, but also immanent. This is put, let's just read a few verses from Psalm 104. He set the earth on its foundations. It can never be moved. You covered it with the deep as with a garment. The waters stood above the mountains. You set a boundary they cannot cross. Never again will they cover the earth. Wine that gladdens the heart of man, oil to make his face shine, and bread that sustains his heart. The trees of the Lord are well watered, the cedars of Lebanon that he planted. There the birds make their nest, the stork has its home in the pine trees. The high mountains belong to the wild goats, the crags are a refuge for the conies. The moon marks off the seasons, and the sun knows where to go down. You bring darkness and it becomes night, and all the beasts of the forest prowl. We see God's continual care over creation. He has not left it alone, like a watchmaker making a watch and then just leaving it to run. God is there continually in all of nature, in the movement of the sun and the moon, in the feeding of the animals. God loves the world of nature and animals. And in rejecting New Age, I believe we must not retreat into a deistic materialism where the immanence of God is denied. This is the danger, I believe. And reading some anti-New Age pamphlets that I've done, one gets the impression that if anything cannot be explained in terms of materialistic Western science, it must be of the devil. So many New Age anti-New Age publications tell us that all alternative medicine is of the devil because it's not based on Western materialistic science, and I don't believe that is true. And as I'll be referring later to Mr. Still and homeopathy, with his permission, I've already asked him. God has created man as part of nature. From the dust of the ground we were formed. We have much in common with the animals. Yet we are also created in the image of God. And although man is part of nature, he transcends nature. He's been given authority over nature, but only under the authority of a transcendent God who loves all things that he has created. The command of God for us to subdue all things does not mean that we should be carelessly exploitive of the world of nature. Man is to voice the praise of dumb nature before God. We're to represent nature as we praise and worship God, and we're to represent God to nature as we exercise authority over nature. So then man is a link between heaven and earth. pure science, in my view. Its purpose is to explore the wonders of nature to the glory of God. Technology would be to care for the planet Earth, to till the soil. Art, music, and literature to fill the earth with ever more beauty. God has made us free. Man is free. There were many good trees in the garden from which we can choose. Only one thing God did not give us freedom to do. We must not be the ones who decide what is the difference between good and evil. God is the one who decides the difference between good and evil, and he alone. But this does not mean that man is a slave, because there are many good trees in the garden from which we can choose. But as we know, man decides to become his own God. He is going to decide for himself what is the difference between good and evil. Here, Adam and Eve decide that they're going to go for subjective situation ethics. They'll be the ones who decide what is the difference between good and evil. And so they eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And we know the story, sin comes into the world. And the result is that the relationship between man and God, man and woman, and man and nature is broken. Nature suffers too. Cursed is the ground because of you. Yes, man's soul, his consciousness, his will, is bound up with nature. When man sins, nature suffers. But through the chosen people and the promised land, God begins to work out his painful purposes for the redemption of the world of man and nature. And in Christ, this is all brought together and fulfilled. But nature itself is caught up in redemption. God's covenant with Noah includes the animals. We read in Hosea 2 verse 18, "In that day I will make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field and the birds of the air and the creatures that move along the ground." Jeremiah 33, "I'll make a covenant with day and night and the fixed laws of heaven and earth." In the book of Jonah, God saves Nineveh for the sake of both the people and the animals. In the New Testament, God cares for every sparrow, but more for human beings. In Romans 8, nature is groaning in travail, waiting for the revealing of the sons of God. Psalm 96, "The trees and all nature rejoice at the coming kingdom of God." Isaiah 11, "The lion and the lamb live in peace, led by a human child." But before this final redemption, the prince of the world is Satan. Although God holds on to man and nature by his word and spirit, there are now other spiritual forces in the world because of man's disobedience. Other spiritual forces have been allowed in. The prince of the power of the air is the devil. Now I want to go on to speak about my own personal experiences of New Age. Four or five years ago, I was attending a conference in Carberry Tower and listening to brilliant lectures from a lecturer, a lady lecturer from Birmingham University. It was on, you know, my old hobby horse, Christian Zionism in the 19th century. That's what she was lecturing on. But that's not relevant to what I'm going to say now. Her lectures were being taped. And then she said to the person operating the tape recorder, "Will you please switch the tape recorder off now," is what she said. Not that I'm asking you to do that. She asked him to switch the tape recorder off because she'd got something else to tell us. She said, "There's a new movement sweeping the Western world called New Age. It's a new type of religion or spirituality, sweeping the United States and this country, especially the middle classes, pervading the TV soap operas, pop music, and popular magazines. It is anti-Christian and anti-Jewish and also anti-Islamic because of its rejection of the transcendent God before whom we're all accountable. It believes in nature worship. It has backers in the world of science, business, politics, and even the church. Hitler had been a nature worshipper, she said. And I know that is true. I hadn't realized that when she told us, but I discovered later it is true. The existence of the Jews and the testimony of the Christian church bear witness to the reality of a transcendent God before whom all individuals and nations are accountable. She went on to say that she thought the Church of England was about to become apostate by accepting these things. She said that New Age would become anti-Semitic, like Hitler, and anti-Orthodox Christianity. And in a few decades' time, it would hold the reins of power, great persecution would break out, and there would be another Holocaust. Now, that was the first I had ever heard of New Age, and I would have dismissed it as really a lot of nonsense if it hadn't been for the fact that I'd been so impressed by the scholarship, historical scholarship, which she'd given when she was lecturing to us on the history of 19th century Christianity. I'm still not sure what to make of her more apocalyptic predictions. I still really doubt whether it's true what she says there, but one never knows. The following year I was in Israel and I was meeting some Israeli Hebrew Christians, Messianic Jews as they're called these days. They learnt that I was a minister of the Church of Scotland and they were horrified. Hadn't the Church of Scotland, they asked me, turn the church in Tiberias into a New Age centre? Now, I knew that the minister there, and I'm mentioning no names, was passionately interested in astrology and numerology and had written a book about it, which was on sale in our Church of Scotland bookshop in Edinburgh. I knew also that other missionaries and our youth volunteers had complained about this. They'd attended the services in Tiberias and the occult was being used. A great deal was being taught about the spiritual significance of the ancient pyramids of Egypt and even the shapes of the triangles of the tiles on the floor in the Church of Scotland centre, believe it or not. I answered these Hebrew Christians and said, you're mistaken, the Church of Scotland is not New Age, that's not its policy. They said to me, but the Church of Scotland knew that this man had written these books and was interested in these things before they appointed him. And I can tell you that throughout Israel, amongst the Hebrew Christians, the Church of Scotland was thought of as promoting New Age. That's my second little experience. Third experience was while I was teaching at BTI. Like others here, I do part-time teaching at BTI once a week. And the students invited me, after the lecture I'd given one day, to come and see a video about New Age. And according to this video, produced in America, New Age had come to the West as a result of a deliberate plan by Indian Hindu leaders. They wanted to convert the West to Hinduism without using the word Hindu. Because Hinduism, unlike Islam, is not an organized religion, but it's more a worldview, as I've been explaining. It's simply pantheism, and ancient paganism. And the visit of the Maharishi Yogi in the 1960s was the first part of this Hindu plan to convert the West to Hinduism. Now, how does New Age manifest itself in popular culture today? And I'm going to think of it now at its lowest level, its most popular level. A few years ago, there were many different separate occult practices going on in this country. What New Age has done is brought them together under a sort of umbrella, so that the occult things like astrology and spiritism and tarot cards and Ouija boards, rather than being separate things, are now being brought together in one philosophy, or theology in inverted commas, by the New Age movement. Also, it gives some kind of coherence in terms of philosophy and science, and even theology, to the many forms of nature spirituality, or even the worship of nature. Because I knew I was to give this talk here today, I bought, and I hope you don't think it's too bad, I bought this magazine in John Menzies. It's a very popular magazine. This is the only copy I've ever bought of it. I don't take it regularly. But I thought at least I should see what was being said. The back cover, I'll just read the back cover ad. Mysteries, London Psychic Shop and New Age Centre. Books and magazines, all mystical, spiritual and New Age subjects covered. New section devoted entirely to all aspects of alternative medicine and holistic living. Pendulums, healing crystals, tarot, games, posters, ionizers, rainbow crystals, chimes, oils, incense, candles, greeting cards, etc., etc. Enormous video, audio-visual department, the largest selection of New Age music tapes and LPs in Britain. Also hundreds of subliminal self-hypnosis and instructional tapes, CDs and videos available. Psychic readings available every day with experienced clairvoyant consultants, tarot, palmistry, astrology, and other things I can't pronounce there. Right, now, I turn to page 60 in this booklet, and here is an ad. Babylonian goddess unleashes torrents of good fortune. How you can command adoration of any man or woman. How to control your enemies. How to become astrally invisible and to discover secret knowledge. How to command respect of those who take you for granted. How to create a magic mirror to get money and possessions, find a true soulmate, receive cash every day, get lucky in gambling, find hidden treasure, live a charmed life, etc., etc. Now, this magazine is full of such advertisements. Inside the magazine is much about the ancient spiritual wisdom of North American Indians, ancient Celtic paganism, and Hinduism. And it's even interested in biblical prophecy in a very superficial sense. It was wondering whether the fact that the UN resolutions about Iraq are approximating to 666. You know, they started at 660. And this prediction magazine thinks this might be significant. Perhaps I should finish now. And I'm going, that's New Age at its most sort of base level, but I want to show how it gets more sophisticated. I finished by reading quotations from the Prediction magazine. That's how New Age and the occult relate to popular culture. At just a slightly higher level, I came across this magazine of the Trustee Savings Bank put out for young people, I see some of you are nodding your head. Maybe you know what I'm going to refer to. It's an article entitled New Age, and it's commending it to its readers. I just read a few things from it. New Age will be the new era. It's clean, it's green, it's the way to be seen. After a decade of the vile me generation and the complex aspirations of the yuppie syndrome, it's time to care, to be new. No longer the me, I'm all right, Jack, because the difficult search for the self is now here. We are being guided to be good, to look after one another and love thy neighbor by improving ourselves first. Right on. Improvement is the key word. Improving ourselves, our neighbor, and our world. So what's it all about? Who invented it and what is it? Well, it's been around for some time. In the 1950s, the aristocrat Sir George Trevelyan, I'll come back to him in a minute, a little later, Sir George Trevelyan pioneered spiritual growth by giving courses in holism and was thus christened the godfather of the British New Age. In California, it's been as much as part of the coast lifestyle as Walt Disney and surfing. In India and China and Japan, it's been around forever, it seems. And looking at the lifestyle, it's all pretty relaxed. One, it's green. New Age is environment friendly and has a lot to do with saving our planet. Two, it's spiritual. Let's start with crystals. The simplest expression of New Age, is that Californians place them on their foreheads or wear them on their chests. Advocates claim that crystals contain certain life-enhancing healing properties. Clear quartz is the best. There is an energy surrounding all living organisms. It's called aura. The more spiritually developed the being, such as Jesus Christ, the wider the circular aura. Or discover the Japanese art of no mind, with Buddhist undertones. Zen, in a word. Release all your muscles, unhinge your spine, and let all other joints move freely, lying on your back with your knees up, the Alexander technique. Four, it's musical. Five, it is filmed. Switch on to Channel 4 at about 9 a.m. in the week, and you're likely to watch landscape and seascape escapism. Set to music, it's dreamy. It's like watching a painting move. Six, it is aristocratic. Prince Charles comes into the New Age list. The future king is well aware. As mentioned earlier, Sir George Trevelyan gave much to the British New Age movement. Seven, it's taken seriously. You could go to college to learn more, discover more about New Age, and at the same time yourself. Eight, it's words and phrases. Karma, the law of cause and effect, a cosmic code of ethics. Nirvana, perfect bliss attained by the extinction of individuality. Nine, it's fashionable. Again, a crystal around your neck is fashionable, as well as saying you're sensitive and energized. Could you get into New Age? Write to the editor of this magazine, T.S. Beat, and he'll tell you about it. That's just an example of how it's getting into our culture today. And there are many other examples. Now, sorry, just another quote from, this is from the Today magazine, headed Pagan Prince. Christianity has sought to draw people away from what they have seen as the pagan worship of natural phenomena, the Duke of Edinburgh told a meeting of the North American Conference on Religion and Ecology. And this is what the Duke of Edinburgh said: it is now apparent that the ecological pragmatism of the so-called pagan religions, such as that of the American Indians, the Polynesians and the Australian Aborigines, was a great deal more realistic in terms of conservation ethics than the more intellectual philosophies of the revealed religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, he means by that. In Britain, an advisor to one of Britain's leading evangelical organizations is warning that fear generated by attacks on New Age ideas may deter Christians from properly expressing environmental concern. Speaking at the Greenbelt Arts Festival, Tim Cooper, National Coordinator of Christian Ecology Link, said, "Christians are right to look critically at the growing influence of the New Age movement, but our criticism must be in proportion. Not all of what New Age movement is saying is wrong." I agree with that. "We seem to be treating the New Age movement as the new enemy in place of the communists now that the Cold War is over. And yet many in the movement are searching for spiritual truth. If we simply attack them with hostility and poorly reasoned arguments, they will not listen to us and not be open to the gospel." I agree with that comment. If we retreat into materialism, then we've lost the argument in the end. On a still more sophisticated level, look at the classier bookshops, Waterstones, etc., and you'll see big new sections on New Age. Books written by the intellectual middle classes, including scientists, commending New Age to us in ways that I've explained. It has many strands. The Theosophy movement, from which Alice Bailey came, teaching a hierarchy of spirits and masters of wisdom in nature, teaching Lucifer as the angel of light, Maitreya, if I'm getting the pronunciation right, a new Messiah who will come. It is also, as I've said, a revival of ancient paganism and Hinduism. It is pantheism. The New Age is the age of Aquarius. Astrologers say that at about 2000 AD, a new astrological age will come into being. The vernal equinox will leave the age of the, will mean that we're leaving the age of the fish, symbolized the symbol of Christianity, and move into the age of Aquarius, symbolizing water. So Christianity should be dying out by the end of this century, and a new age will come in, so the astrological signs tell us. And then we will have a new god or goddess, Mother Nature. We are all part of nature, and we must find the God within us. We must unlock our spiritual potential using self-hypnosis, yoga, many occult practices, earth spirit festivals. Channelers, those are those people who are spiritual mediums who help us reach our higher consciousness. Crystals, already mentioned, for tuning in our body energy and communicating with the past and the future. Big business has taken to New Age and uses techniques for changing people's world view and view of themselves to make them more effective executives. Just a few weeks ago, I was reading the Spectator magazine, and I noticed that there was an interview with this Sir George Trevelyan in it, the founder of the British New Age movement. He's now in his 80s, and these were the points that he made in his he said that he'd been an agnostic, a materialist agnostic, but now he believes in angels and fairies. "Each of us," he says, "has a higher self who, in cooperation with our guardian angel, gives us special life situations and then lets us make the decision." In other words, our higher self, in cooperation with our guardian angel, puts us into certain human situations and then leaves us to see what we'll do. The earth Sir George says, has key lines like spiritual electric cables. And one must find where these spiritual electric cables are and build one's house upon them. Find where they cross, and then you'll really be in the center of spiritual power. He believes that there's a very deep union of man and man, man and nature, and that will soon be seen in the world. The age of Aquarius, he believes in, when there'll be an outpouring of love upon the earth. After death, we go through a dark tunnel and then we see a glow of light. Now, many people who have had near death or experiences speak of this. I can think of a very devout evangelical Christian lady whom I know very well, who had that experience in childbirth. She was thought to be dead and she went through a dark tunnel and saw the bright light, like many people have described. But Sir George says that this is all in preparation for reincarnation. He says, though, if you've lived your life for materialism and criticism of others, you'll go to another place without sunshine, populated by very unpleasant people. And his description of it is rather like C.S. Lewis's description of hell in his fantasy, The Great Divorce. In fact, I can't prove it, but I think that Sir George must have read C.S. Lewis's The Great Divorce, because his description is very like C.S. Lewis's. Now, one can see why many people are attracted to this. But what is ignored by many admirers of ancient pagan religions is that Hinduism has been the major cause of poverty in India and the basis of the appallingly cruel caste system, that North American Indians, for all their good points, I think I'm right in saying this, you may correct me, practiced ritual torture as part of their daily religious ritual. Victims were tortured for days at a time while the whole community looked on. That ancient British paganism, before the advent of Christianity to these islands, practiced child sacrifice, as did the Canaanite nature religions of Old Testament times. Which leads me to the next point, fascination with the occult in its more unpleasant, obviously unpleasant forms, leads to devil worship and child sacrifice. I liken it to the relationship between soft drugs and hard drugs. Ordinary New Age practices are like the soft drugs, but they can easily lead on to what is the hard drugs, to Satanism, devil worship, and similar things. I was horrified just a few weeks ago when I was walking with my wife from Edinburgh Waverley Station to the university, and we passed three shops on that walk, which, and I confess I didn't go into them because we were rushing, but we had a good look in the windows. I don't know if you're familiar with these shops, devoted to the devil, bloodlust, torture, and the like. Do any of you Edinburgh people know what I'm talking about? It's up as you come up, I've forgotten the name of the road, walking up from Waverley Station, you come up onto the Royal Mile just before going on to George IV Bridge. There's two shops there and there's another one on the Royal Mile, which we passed. And I had wanted to go in and investigate those shops before coming to give this talk, but I'm afraid I never did visit Edinburgh again. But I would like to have a closer look at what's going on in those shops. And looking in at the window, there were images of torture, suffering, death, skeletons, blackness, extreme ugliness, blood, One shop, when you looked at it from a distance, it looked as if it was full of toys. But when you got and looked closely in the window, you saw the toys were extremely ugly images to do with suffering and torture and the devil. And these weren't just odd items in the shops. These were what all the shops were. They were presumably doing good business, or how else could they survive in such places in Edinburgh? I've read a bit about satanic ritual child abuse, which has been in the news recently. You'll know the police in Nottingham and Rochdale have seemed to deny that such a thing exists. But I've read articles by social workers with no evangelical Christian axe to grind, in fact, who describe themselves as atheists, saying that there is no doubt about it that there is ritual child abuse and ritual child sacrifice going on in our country. And the evidence I read in the New Statesman I was reading at that time seemed very convincing to me. They talked about how children from entirely different homes who hadn't known one another told the same stories of how being taken to rich people's homes, of being tortured and abused in ways, sexually abused in ways that one couldn't describe, wouldn't want to describe in this meeting. And the social worker said they had never in all their experience seen such traumatized and fearful children. About a month ago, as I was getting up in the morning, I had Radio 4 on, listening to, and if you listen to Radio 4 at about 7:45 in the morning, there's Thought for the Day. It's usually quite good, actually, the Thought for the Day at about 7:45. On the whole of UK Radio 4, it was the Bishop of Oxford. And he was saying that I was quite interested he should say this in the Thought for the Day. He said he believed there was a cover-up about child abuse and child sacrifice. He believed it really did exist. And that by the end of this century, he said, I don't know if it's right or not, but for the Bishop of Oxford to say it on Thought for the Day on Radio 4, there must be something in it. He said that by the end of this century, it's reckoned there'll be one child sacrifice per day. Now, he didn't say whether he meant in the world or within Britain. I thought he meant within Britain. Now, not all occult or New Age is direct dealing with the devil, but some of it is. Other parts of it are more benign, and yet, like as soft drugs can lead to hard drugs, so this can lead to a dangerous removing of our spiritual protective clothing. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, I'm not sure what I mean, and I'd be interested to hear your comments, and I might be completely wrong in my thinking, but I want to tell you now a story. Now, there's one person in this room who knows whom I'm talking about, only one of you, and I'm sure that one person will not pass on what I'm about to say. In another area of where I had done Christian work, but in this country, my wife and I got to know a man very well who was in and out of psychiatric hospital. When we first met him, he was kept in the maximum security ward in the nearest psychiatric hospital. He'd been taken there in handcuffs. And over the years we got to know him, I would say half the time he was in hospital and half the time he was allowed home, where they hoped he would get better. He was and he still is, a highly intelligent and very well educated man. At best in those days, he was highly eccentric, loud and rather frightening to be with. At worst, he was mad in the literal sense of that word. I remember going into his house one day and he had put broken glass everywhere in the house, up the stairs, in every room. So walking about, it was a very dangerous thing. He'd filled his bath up with water and he deliberately was wanting the water to flow out of the bath, onto the bathroom floor, down the stairs, throughout the house, because he felt there was something in the house that needed to be cleansed and removed from the house. When he was very bad like this, he would also blaspheme in an appalling and an obscene way, especially in front of little children. Now, my wife and I got to know him very well. Occasionally, as he was taken away by the police because he used to cause a disturbance, but he hated going to this psychiatric hospital. He hated it. Now, one day, a number of people phoned me up and said, he's getting very bad again. You, the parish minister, they knew that my wife and I were close to him. You must get the police now before something awful happens. I knew he would never forgive me if I did that. So I went to his house and he hit me across the arm with a frying pan here when I went in. Nevertheless, I said to him, I've come to read the Bible and pray in every room in this house, and we're going to start in the attic. And I'm not in the charismatic movement, dear friends, and this is the only incident of its kind that I've ever experienced in my whole ministry. But I went into, so he provided a ladder for me, and we went up into the attic. I started reading the beginning of Mark's Gospel, just a few verses, then a prayer. Jesus casting out demons. And then I did that in the bedroom, in the bathroom, everywhere. Went to every room in the house, then down below. And when I had finished this, after about 15, 20 minutes, and he was with me, he was like a lamb. And we knelt down together and said the 23rd Psalm. And he was completely better. And when he next went to hospital for his routine treatment, the hospital told me they had never, in all their experience, known him like that. Now, it's a long story, and there's more to the story than that, and I'm not going to bore you with that. Although it's an interesting story, but there isn't time to tell you. But one thing he asked me when it was all over, or one thing he told me when it was all over, was that during his bad time, he had literally, he said, smelt the fires of hell. And then he asked me this question. He said, why should I have been the one who was the battleground for the devil and for evil? Well, I couldn't answer that. But a few months later, my wife and I went to Atlanta, Georgia, where we were in a church. And there I was talking to an American church elder in an evangelical church in Atlanta, where I was preaching, who was also a psychiatrist. And I asked him about this question that I'd been asked, why should I be the battleground for good and evil like that? Interestingly, this psychiatrist, church elder in this evangelical church, believed in demon possession. He said, British Christian psychiatrists don't believe, but we in America do believe in it, he said. Then he told me this, his interpretation of the Adam and Eve story, and I'm not saying this is my view, I'm just giving it to you to something to think about. He referred to God clothing Adam and Eve after the fall. And he interpreted this as God giving us spiritual protective clothing so that we don't see in our normal lives spiritual realities such as demons and angels, or else we simply couldn't live a normal human life in this world. And he believed that occult practices, which this chap had been involved in, remove the spiritual protective clothing, so we're much more open to these attacks from the devil. I was fascinated as I listened to this American church elder psychiatrist saying this, because I thought, he seems to know an awful lot about it. And I'm not saying his interpretation is right, I'm just giving it to you to think about. But a year or two later, I was talking to the minister of that church in Atlanta, who is now a close friend of ours, and He told me that church elder that you knew is now in prison, 20-year prison sentence for child abuse and of the most appalling child pornography. That evangelical church elder, who seemed to me to know so much about the workings of the devil. Anyway, that's just a little story. However, there can be a hysterical reaction against the New Age. For example, if New Age is for something, we must be against it. New Age, people are concerned for the environment and this planet Earth. Does this mean we should not be concerned? Of course not. They believe in relaxing the mind and thinking of beautiful scenery. When I was leaving in Ellen Church, one of my church elders came to visit me and said, "You're going to a new church, this will be a lot of time of strain for you. I'm going to tell you how to relax your mind." He said, "What you must do is sit back in the chair and imagine beautiful scenery, take a few deep breaths, and feel your muscles relaxing. Do that for about 5 or 10 minutes and you'll feel much better." And I did do that. Well, later I read that that was dangerous. But I don't think it's dangerous. But supposing I had imagined Lochmorlick, say, a lovely place. Supposing I had gone on to imagine the sun over Lochmorlick, and I've listened to one of these tapes, which is to do with self-hypnosis. This is the sort of thing it tells you to do. Imagine the sun. Then imagine that there's a face in the sun. Then imagine that you're receiving all love from the sun, and the sun's telling you what a good person you are and how great you are. And then you must thank the sun and you must say words to the sun. When that sort of thing happens, you've moved over into the occult. But I personally don't believe that my practice every so often of sitting in the chair and thinking of the Scottish Highlands is opening me to the occult. But some people would tell me that I mustn't even do that. Animal welfare is, of course, a concern of the New Age. Well, we must be concerned, surely. We must be against cruelty to children. And alternative medicine. Now, I want to... This is New Age promise, age-old problem. This is the anti-New Age publication by the Evangelical Alliance. And I just want to read you one little paragraph. "People dissatisfied with the West's materialistic culture are turning to the East and back to pre-Christian beliefs and practices, including spirit guides, pyramidology, tarot readings, crystal energy, homeopathy, and yoga." Notice it includes in that list homeopathy. And so it is in other lists. And other lists that one can read in anti-New Age publications include acupuncture, chiropractic medicine, and similar things. Now, a few weeks or months ago, I was reading my Today magazine and reading the letters column, and there was a letter from Mr. Still saying, "I've been using homeopathy for 40 years, was it? 50 on years. And there's nothing occult in it, and it saved my life," I think you said. I've asked Mr. Still's permission to refer to this. The next month there was a reply saying Mr. Still's a very spiritual man and admired in Scotland, but he's wrong here because it is of the occult. And the writer of the letter said the founder of homeopathy believed in the occult. Therefore, homeopathy must be of the occult. That was his argument. Am I right? Now, my wife uses has been to a chiropractor, and it has really helped her back problems and headache problems. And I've known many people where spine manipulation is used to relieve backache, slip discs, and certain types of headaches. There is absolutely nothing occult about that. Even if the inventor of it believed in the occult. And I want to tell you another story to illustrate this point. In my years in Africa, one of my church elders came to me one day, an African church elder came to me one day and said, I've got an awful pain in my chest here and my back here. And I'm almost crippled with it. I said, have you been to the doctor? He said, yes, I've been at the hospital. I queued for ages. And they gave me some penicillin and anti-malaria medicine, which is the standard treatment in Malawi for all kinds of ailments. And I am no better. A week or so later, I saw him again, and he said, I am still no better. I can hardly move, and I've been back to the hospital again. No improvement. A week or so later, I asked him, how are you now? He said, I'm completely cured. I went to the witch doctor, the medicine man, and he gave me treatment, and I'm perfectly well. I said, what did he tell you to do? He said, he told me to get some cloths or blankets, heat them, make them very hot, like a hot water bottle, and put them on my chest and on my back, and it cured me. Now, this is a perfectly true story. A few weeks after that, I came home on leave and was in Edinburgh, and I had this awful pain in my chest and back. This is a perfectly true story. And I went to the doctor in Edinburgh. My GP said, what you've got to do is you've got to get a hot water bottle and put it here and here. And it worked. He said it was fibrositis. I don't know whether that was the correct diagnosis, but it worked. Now, the medicine man or the witch doctor's advice is not always of the devil. Even if he himself uses the occult. On reading some anti-New Age material, one gets the impression that if some cure is not of Western materialistic science, it must be of the devil. If the cure cannot be got from your local GP or your National Health Service or from an ordinary chemist, then it's of the occult. I don't believe that. I think that's simply nonsense. I think that ordinary herbalists in Africa and Asia and China may know a good deal about the healing properties of plants and perhaps acupuncture and homeopathy, but this doesn't mean it's from the devil. Just because we may not understand how homeopathy works does not mean that it is of the occult, even if its inventor dabbled in the occult. I think we have to get that clear. Now, I don't use homeopathy, but if I was convinced that it would help me, then I would be prepared to try it. There was a very interesting program which some of us saw on the television about it a week or so ago. It seemed very convincing to me, although it is an absolute mystery as to how it works. It works on animals as well as human beings. But just because something is mysterious, and just because something has not originated in Western materialistic science, doesn't mean that it's of the devil. To use Mr. Still's word, we have to we have to differentiate with things which really differ. Wasn't that what you said? Well, I just finished by quoting again my old friend C.S. Lewis. He says there are basically four world views. Stoicism, which he dismisses as for heroes only. Atheism, which he dismisses as for boys only, for those who are not grown up. Hinduism and the biblical worldview. Islam, he rightly says, is a Christian heresy, so we can't look upon that as a separate worldview. Buddhism is a heresy of, or a variety of Hinduism, so that's not a separate worldview. Stoicism for heroes, that dismisses that. Atheism for boys dismisses that. We're left with Hinduism, which is pantheism or New Age, it's all the same thing, and the biblical worldview. And I believe that intellectually, New Age pantheism, Hinduism, what ancient paganism, whatever you call it, is the only serious intellectual challenge to the biblical worldview. But we must know what the biblical worldview is. It's a view that in understanding the biblical worldview, we must not confuse it with a form of deism. And we must understand why we believe in a God who is both transcendent and yet who upholds all things, including nature, by his word and spirit, continues to hold it in being, and, as I believe, has a place for nature in his purposes of redemption as well. And that, I just close by quoting that well-known verse which speaks of both the transcendence and immanence of God in Isaiah 57 verse 15. For this is what the High and Lofty One says, he who lives forever, whose name is holy, I live in a high and holy place, but also with him who is contrite and lowly in spirit, to revive the spirit of the lowly, and to revive the heart of the contrite.